Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
You'll be the best and you got to pay a little price. You want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me this week, a truly fabulous co-host, one of my favorite analysts in the sport, someone I learn from all the time, someone I gas up constantly because I mean it, because he is awesome, Deontay Lee. Deontay, how we doing?
I'm great. Glad to be back on. Obviously, we talked a lot over the last couple of months about transitions for me career-wise, and we've talked about all the stuff with the media business and all that. So I'm glad to be in a space where we can be together and talking about football again.
I know. As much time as you've got, I will take it.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, so Deontay and I are going to be talking a little bit about draft today, but we have been planning this for a couple of weeks in terms of the big news that has sort of rocked the Rams cage this offseason, the Aaron Donald retirement. And obviously it feels like a little bit of a lifetime ago, really, in football world since he made the announcement. And we've obviously covered that topic here on the 11 Personnel Podcast and over at theathletic.com. You can read a bunch of work on the topic from the retirement, from why he made the decision, and then why the Rams operated the way that they did in free agency, and Les and Sean talking to me at league meetings on the record. You can read about Tony Pastore's in his once per year conversation on the record, where he's talking about how they build, they're going to maybe look at different ways of team building. All of that is over on theathletic.com. But for here, Deontay, I know how special Aaron Donald has been to you. I mean, we bonded, you and I first bonded because like we're defensive people, you know, like ironically, I cover a Sean McVay team, but we are defensive people. Like that's what we first bonded over. And I know Aaron really just his greatness, I think, is special to so many, but I wanted to ask you, first of all, what was your reaction when you heard the news? And what are some moments that immediately, we all have it, like the moments that immediately crystallize in our minds when we think about Aaron Donald?
So my first reaction was, for as shocked as I, and I'm sure everybody else in the football public was, I know in talking to you and following your work, this was kind of something that I think I've been bracing for since the Super Bowl win, right? Like it was almost an immediate conversation in the moments after. It was like, okay, well, what's 99's future look like? Right. And then there's the rough season following and it seems like every conversation is just about what everybody in the building's future is going to look like. Right. So I think that this was always something that was kind of looming. Still, you get the news. And I think that just like it is, like if you follow like recruiting in college football and you see such and such junior just committed to Notre Dame or such and such junior just committed to Ohio State, and you kind of have that like existential dread of like aging, you know, that's happening.
That's such a good point. Oh my God.
There was just kind of a thought of like, wow, I just witnessed a Hall of Famer's career from beginning to end through my formative years. And that's over, and I'm 30. And I don't really know how to handle what I'm pondering right now, right? So there was definitely a thought of like, wow, I witnessed something that I can say you may only get one opportunity in a lifetime as a sports fan to see, right? Which is a guy who is transformative, who transcends not just his position, but his entire side of the ball, the sport itself. So that was really like my first thoughts. And then when I think of just a moment that really crystallizes who he is, it is that Super Bowl run, right? You think about that 49ers game and you hear, you know, how the Rams talked about the Niners, right? They kick our butts all the time. We can't get over the hump. They're beating us all the time. We need to go close the door on this and really stamp ourselves, not only as kings of the NFC, West, but a real Super Bowl contending team. And you think about the play that closes out the NFC title game on the way to the Super Bowl, and who else but 99 makes the play. And then you think about the Super Bowl itself, right? And coming down to the final drive, and you have to respect who Joe Burrow is and what that Bengals offense was at that time. And you get to that 4th-and-1 situation and you almost know, sight unseen, you're not running the ball because you would never test 99 that way. And then you see pass, and still this guy working through a double team, efforting to affect the play, and effectively closes out the Super Bowl. And it's like just in a moment, in a 3 week span, you got to see why he is who he is, why he meant so much to Los Angeles, why I think you can't extricate Sean McVay's career without talking about Aaron Donald. And I think the same is in the inverse, right? Like, think about Raheem Morris, you think about what Brandon Staley was able to do in his year as a defensive coordinator. There's so much of that side of the ball for this franchise revolves around the decade that this guy has spent as basically the best defensive lineman in football from the moment he walked into the league. And that you have to appreciate the rarity in that.
Yeah, just beautifully said, Deontay. And also, like, this is reductive even for me to say it, but it's like coaches, players, personnel people, they would all say Aaron Donald gets people paid.
100%.
And they'd be talking sometimes about the edge player that they'd partner with him,
Right.
but they'd also be talking about themselves
Yes.
in a lot of ways. And it really is because it wasn't just because of how elite of a talent he was. It was, and I've talked about this with you a lot, it's like that extra layer of greatness that he
Right.
always seemed so like haunted toward finding, but not haunted in a negative way. It was like this like healthy obsession with
Yes.
being that next level of great, even after he got paid. Chris Long on the Greenlight podcast put it in the best way, I think. And obviously he played with Aaron in St.
Right.
Louis, and he was like, you could have paid that guy $1 billion and he still would have shown up every day and outworked everybody else in that building.
Right.
And then he was also like, thank God Aaron is such a nice person, because if someone like that was that great at something
Yes.
like that, God help the world kind of a thing.
Yes.
So it's like, thank
Right.
God Aaron's so nice. But a couple other things you said too that I wanted to touch on. So football is so crazy, right? So like I hadn't had time really to process until after sort of the fallout of the situation of him retiring. And like you mentioned, yes, there were breadcrumbs, and we've talked about this on this podcast. I inadvertently just like scared the shit out of people a couple weeks before it happened, and I
Yeah.
didn't mean to do that, but also like we trust fall here on the 11 Personnel podcast. Also, I love that you opened with an existential moment, because we do love to get existential.
Yes.
We love dread on the 11
Right.
Personnel
Yes.
podcast. And so but you mentioned, after all of those things are processed through, and things are starting to settle a little bit, and you're understanding like, oh, this is real, this is happening, and this is, there's got to be a plan moving forward. You just re realize like football is so freaking weird, like in the best way,
Yeah.
because who do they agree to terms with? These two are not related, by the way. I know Rams fans would be like, oh my gosh, but they're not related. But who do they agree to terms with as their new backup quarterback on the day that Aaron retires? But Jimmy Garoppolo, who was just a pain in their ass for so many years with Kyle, paired with Kyle Shanahan, and Aaron was the demon killer. Like Aaron, after that game, the NFC Championship game on the way to the Super Bowl, it was things that come to you in flashes that I'll never forget, right? So I remember being in the bottom of Tampa Stadium when the players are coming off the field after that crazy win, like the love of the game route, the Matthew Stafford getting hit by Ndamukong Suh right up the A gap on the blitz that shouldn't have been, or the all out that shouldn't have been called, and unfurling this throw down the field, and Cooper Kupp having the wherewithal to like get down so that Matt Gay can kick the field goal. It just craziness, right? Like never in my life will I ever, my heart will never do that again. Like, because it will not make it to the next day. So, and then you felt this sort of like, and I remember Kara Henderson Snead, Les Snead's wife, was texting me after the game and was like talking about the hero's journey, right? And you have to face the demon to get to the other side, kind of a thing. And it was a whole moment. Everybody in that organization was like, this is a moment right here, because they knew that the 49ers, who the Rams had not beaten, were on the other side. And when I wrote the column after this game, that win, it was like, this was not a win. This was an exorcism.
Right.
Like, and Aaron was the one, like Aaron was the one who did that, who got
Right.
them to that. It's yes, Matthew Stafford. Yes, Leonard Floyd. Yes, Cooper Kupp. Yes, all of these players that stepped up, Von Miller, Odell Beckham, like all of these
Right.
players that were a part of that magical season. But like Aaron, when it had to be done, when the door had to be closed on an era
Right.
of like true mind game torture,
Right.
that Sean
Right.
McVay was getting asked by, you know, colleagues, reporters in his press conferences, is Kyle Shanahan in your head? Like, you know, it was the end, this door closing moment for, I think, all of them, where they really felt that belief, but also felt that true, you never get used to Aaron. Like, you never get used to having that player around.
Right.
But that was, I think, that reminder of exactly what he can, like, he could take the world in his hands and break you with it. Like,
Exactly.
and it's hard to describe that feeling of when you see that. It's hard to convey that and communicate it. And I think when we saw the tears after the Super Bowl, and we saw the sort of relief, I kind of expressed that as like relief for him,
Yeah.
because it's hard to hold on to all that. It's hard to have that much, I guess, significance and power in your own timeline,
Right.
and understand what the stakes are. And so I always really admired that about him, was that he could hold that weight, and then he could also like hit you with it.
Right, exactly. I think, and you know, like you said, it can be reductive, and I think it's fair for maybe fans of sports or just people who follow entertainment culture in general to kind of roll their eyes and you start talking poetically about people's journeys through lives, especially somebody who's been successful year over year. But boiling it down to healthy obsession and almost, you know, referencing that almost as a torture device, I think is really fitting, right? Like, when I listen to like the Playmakers podcast and you talk and listening to you talk about Sean McVay, right, and just how big that year was for him and for the franchise in general, I do think that so much of that is emblematic in Aaron's career, right? So to your point about these moments where he's at the center of it, I think that that's fitting. Like I said, you can't talk about the story of the Rams franchise since moving back to Los Angeles without Aaron Donald really being at the center of it. And that's considering that you might have the greatest play caller in the NFL as your head coach. That's considering all these big NFL names, Les Snead, Raheem Morris, Brandon Staley for the time that he was there, Kevin O'Connell, who was an offensive coordinator, all these people who have gone on to find success elsewhere, and people who will probably be talking about for the decades to come. At the end of the day, when my son is asking me about why 99 is the first ballot Hall of Famer, I'm going to be able to come back to that. And you can tell that story in the way that, you know, is really fitting for NFL films, right? All the slow motion and the pomp and circumstance, like that's all very fitting for him as a player. And as a guy who can wear that weight, like that's something I marvel at with the greatest athletes, period, right? Talk about that with LeBron all the time. And you think about that with like Mike Trout in baseball, these guys who have walked in the door, expected to deliver, they do deliver, and they do it over and over again. And you can't help but marvel at the fact that somebody can get up every day knowing that they have nothing left to prove per se, and still finding a way to compete and want to go show that they can handle the weight of being the greatest at what they do. That's something that I can't help but marvel at. And again, that's a real kind of taking a picture of his career and why it is that he matters so much, not just to the Rams, but all of football.
Yeah. And so I think that when Les comes out and says like, we're just not going to replace him. Like, what, you know, we're just not, I mean,
right.
No truer words have ever been spoken. Obviously, personnel wise, they're going to have to do some things to shore up that defensive line. And they needed a pass rusher last year, and that
right.
hasn't changed. Now they just like more glaringly need a pass
right.
rusher. Right.
Yeah.
So, but like it's, it is so interesting because there's been a shift, and part of it is because of a lot of the people you mentioned, and also with Aaron, where they've kind of been like out in the open about what they're going to do. I mean, in 2020, after 2022, it was super interesting because they basically said, we are our defense. I'm slight only slightly paraphrasing here.
Right.
They basically said our defense is the sacrificial lamb to fix our cap issues. We're going to go young and cheap on defense. We're going to get athletes on defense. We're going to maximize potential under Raheem Morris and the coaching staff. And we're going to let Sean Cook on offense.
Right.
And it was, and it worked. And they told us what was going to happen, and it worked. So
Right.
when they come out and they say, okay, we are not replacing Aaron again, Captain Obvious. Thank
Right.
you. Thank you, Les Snead. I we
Right.
No, you are not ever.
Right. Right.
But they also, in speaking with both of them and a couple more executives at league meetings, like, people were pretty open about, hey, yeah, duh, this is a need,
Yeah.
replacing, like, you're not gonna one for one an Aaron Donald, but you're maybe gonna three for one, or you're maybe
Right.
going to get those ratios moving. And it's about how they're gonna plan to rebuild their front. New coaches, Chris Shula being the new defensive coordinator. Now, I do know they're gonna stay in the odd fronts. They're gonna
Right.
continue to do a lot of the things that Chris, butters his bread on, that he was the one who identified Brandon Staley to Sean.
Right.
So that tells me immediately how much he buys into, some of the Fangio inspired things. Now, Raheem has, I think, along with Ejiro Evero, I think they moved it forward. You saw a lot more like cover three rotations, things
Right.
like that, what they were doing. And so, but with Chris, he's going to do something different. We don't know yet. They're not on the field. Also, by the way, massive hole to fill up front. So
Yeah, no
good luck
kidding.
to you, Chris. But I'm kind of wondering, as we talk about what building this defense and what understanding that, like, they patched a couple of holes with some interesting high upside signings, Darius Williams, Trey White, Cam Curl. I love that signing. But they never usually invested in their defensive backfield in that way. Like, it'd be like one guy gets paid, good luck to everyone else, right? But it's pretty clear. It's like, it's not like they're gonna go full coverage dictates front, which is what Staley loved to do. He also had Jalen Ramsey and Darius Williams in his prime, by the
And
way,
John Johnson
and
having the
John
best year of
Johnson
his
and Jordan
career.
Fuller on a rookie deal and like all of this. I mean, good for him. And so love that for him. But I think Chris and the Rams is a little bit like, and are a little bit right now, like, hey, this is what we can do. It's not the coverage will necessarily dictate front, but coverage will help patch front in the short term as maybe young players continue to develop. And you've already got Kobe Turner, a lot of promise in Byron Young as well, but you're missing some players. So the moves that they made in free agency do tell me that that's at least, while it's not going to be a philosophical shift necessarily defensively, to me, it sort of points a couple of clues, a couple of fingers at kind of like where, obviously where their draft needs are, but then also kind of where their more complicated contours are going to come from, or where their guys, the guys on the back end, their veterans, they can speak that language. So when you look at those moves that they made, like, what are your takeaways from that? And what are your sort of impressions, John Carroll guy? I know, I know you followed that tree, quote unquote, way back, but what are your impressions of Chris, understanding he's been under all of these defensive coaches the Rams have had, and then kind of how, as a coach yourself, like, what would you do in his situation with the personnel the Rams have brought in and still need, understanding that this philosophy is not going to change like a huge amount?
I think you hit the nail on the head on what you were laying out, right? Like, so much about the offseason, to me, the reason why I love covering the draft is that so much signaling is done by teams and how they spend, what kind of transactions they make, how they maneuver between February and late April, right? And I think that you kind of hit on the first thing that I was going to say is an immediate signal is sent when you go out and you spend your money on veteran defensive backs. To me, what that says for me, looking at the Rams as an organization and how they want to approach defense is, all right, let's maybe take a more traditional build because we don't have a transformative player in the middle, right? We need to attack the defensive backfield, which is something they haven't done for the past few years, right? And like you said, there was an acknowledgement of things needing to change or a context difference being there after letting go of Jalen Ramsey, right? You make that transaction, you're not really spending the way you were on the edges to try to find role players around Aaron Donald. There was an acknowledgement there, like you said, where you're going to bring youth in. That eventually is going to turn into our quality depth by giving them a chance to go play and make their mistakes and be built under a guy who's very seasoned in Raheem Morris. And like you said, now with Cam Curl, with Darius Williams, a versatile guy. Cam Curl, versatile guy. Trey White, obviously the book is out on him following his injury. We want to see what he looks like, but that's a guy who can do several different things and at his best is someone that you can put out, put out wide and allow him to deal with number one receivers. But I would say that you're probably going to see something that's a little bit closer to maybe what you saw under Brandon Staley from a philosophical perspective, right? In terms of let's play, let's be more complicated on the back end. We're going to do some different things on the back end, and we're going to play with a little bit more youth up front. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see them spend their top 100 draft capital going edge rusher, big interior body, another big interior body, right? With the idea of, hey, we have Kobe Turner who can rush the passer pretty well. As a defensive tackle, let's make sure that we've got guys who can stop the run around them. The same way that they brought in A'shaun Robinson and Greg Gaines as veteran guys to play defensive tackle around Aaron Donald, right? You'll probably see them maybe look at a guy like Laiatu and say, hey, let's get a pure pass rush guy in. We like Byron Young, obviously based off of age and development trajectory and where we drafted him. That was us taking a flyer and the guy hit immediately. But I think there's going to be an acknowledgement that if we're going to build this defensive line more traditionally, we need to have a rotation of guys, a rotation of young talent, and continue to take those swings. So that's kind of what I'm looking at for them in the first couple of rounds is try to get one of the better edge rushers. The way that this draft stacks up, you're probably going to have to spend your first round pick on that if you want immediate returns. So again, signaling the fact that they didn't go spend money on an edge rusher probably tells you the way that they feel about the first round, right? And then going to get those veteran DBs probably tells you, hey, the rest of the draft, you're probably looking at guys who are plug and play role players. So defensive tackles, linebacker, if you get an opportunity, maybe another safety, a guy who can play, more of a utility role between being like a slot and a deep safety, right? So I think that that's what we'll see a little bit of. And that'll give us more context on what they think about Darius Williams right now at this point in his career, what they think about Trey Wright at this point in his career. So that's really the fascinating thing is that you're going to see, I think, a much more traditional build roster wise. As far as Chris Shula goes, I think you laid it out, right? You go on the Wikipedia page and look at his coaching history. You see that he's worked with a lot of the who's who over the last 2 decades of defensive coaches, right? Working under John Pagano, who is like very much old school 3-4 defense, right? You look at his history, being here through Brandon Staley, through Raheem Morris, through Wade Phillips, all these names who are like traditional 3-4 to under front 4-3 defense, which is kind of like two peas in a pod in a way, or a lot of looking at things, different fronts, but very similar types of approaches to playing defense. So I don't think you're going to get some major break, right? This is not going to be, hey, we played defense like this entire time, and now we're bringing in a guy to do all the Mike McDonald stuff in Baltimore, where it's a bunch of simulated pressures and, wild blitzes. You're not bringing in a Wink Martindale who's going to completely overturn the way that you view playing defense on early downs. I think that Shula is a guy that Sean McVay probably looks at and says, you have a library that is a mile deep, right, of understanding a defense. You've seen it all. You know what works. You've been in this organization and you know how Sean wants the defense to look.
Right. That's such a good point, Deontay. I was just going to say, and importantly, one of Sean's best pals, like a
Right.
guy who is going to also is going to be creative, I think, because I don't think a lot of people know much about Chris yet. I'm hopeful
Right.
we can highlight a little bit more of him, depending on the access
For
granted
sure.
throughout the off season. But like he's got some ideas, but this is Sean McVay's team,
Right.
offense and defense. You saw that in 22 with how much of a compromise, even with Raheem being able to move this thing forward the way he did in 23 with some of that
Right.
new stuff, with the like I said, with those rotations, this was still in 22, this was still compromising with the offense.
Right.
This defense was going to basically try to set the table for the offense,
Yep.
whether even if it meant really simplifying that back end coverage in 22,
Right.
which because the offense was going three and out at like a 40% rate, which is
Right.
tragic. But yeah, to your point, this is Sean McVay's team.
Right. And I
But
think that what
Chris,
we've
yeah,
seen,
continue.
no, just what we've seen in the build of the team is taking what you're saying. I think you can expect to see bigger bodies, right? Like you said, they're not going to try to replicate what they had in Aaron Donald. You're not, I don't think you're going to see them go out and try to get a 280-pound gap shooting guy. You'll probably see a guy like T'Vondre Sweat, they might have a little bit of an eye for, right? To go get a real gap and a half, two gap playing nose tackle type. And that's obviously considering the fact that he was just arrested for a DWI. That's got to get cleared with teams. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of investigation. We'll see how that affects his draft stock and how teams feel about him. You're going to see, I think, more of those 300-pound guys on the interior who can really hold things up and keep linebackers clean, and a lot of like pure pass rush talent. I don't think we're going to see a Leonard Floyd, who's kind of like a tweener skill wise, good at setting the edge, probably decent, about average quality in terms of pass rushing, but you can do a bunch with them. You'll probably see more guys who can really get up the field and get after the quarterback, and trusting that their defensive interior is going to do the work and stop in the run. And that's going to be, I think, a context defensively that will be different than what we've known of the Rams, but some is going to be in a structure that I think will be easily identified by Rams fans as being a part of the larger build that they've tried to take on defensively in terms of odd front, 3-4 defense to under front, and playing versatile rotations, two high to single high on the back end. That I think will still be very familiar to Rams fans.
Yeah, it's such a good point. It's a continuation of a philosophy that Sean like wholly bought into in 20. It's not that it can't change. It is malleable. We've seen that. We've seen different offshoots of this philosophy become very malleable and borrow different things. The best coaches do. They
Right.
change and they adjust their personnel, but they also have to recognize like where that personnel is needed. And that's where, Les and his staff are trying to cook right now for a second year in a row. But the interesting thing, so understanding that, so this is as of now, like the draft could change this, right?
Right.
As we know. But as of now, Les mentioned in his on the record comments that they were thinking about moving Kobe to three tech, which I think is a better fit for him. I mean, he played
Right.
great at nose. I mean, good for him, right?
Right.
Like nine sacks as a pure. Are you
Right. That
kidding
says a
me?
lot. Yeah, it
Like,
says a
come
lot about a
on.
guy.
Yeah. So they're thinking about moving to three tech and like those are big shoes to fill. We know we just
For
opened the
sure.
podcast talking about the last three tech, although he also could get anywhere from like the wide nine, which
Right.
I always called the wide 99 because I'm super
Yes.
lame and corny, but thank you for the generous laugh.
For sure.
But like he could do anything. But like so Kobe's not gonna be like lining up on the edge, right? But like
Right.
it, he'll play a solid, I think, play a solid three tech. And if that all stays the same. So we're gonna do fits and faves. You obviously have such a deep knowledge of this draft class. And so I wanna let's work with the operation. And I guess the assumption that that plan sticks and that they're not necessarily looking for like to replace Kobe in the three tech or anything like that. They are looking for some of those players that you mentioned. Who are a couple of who you think are the best fits, understanding that structure, and where might the Rams be able to select them in the draft?
So defensive tackle wise, if you're moving Kobe Turner to three technique, that makes it interesting as far as like the names to watch from there. Because initially my thought was maybe a Byron Murphy might be of interest to them if he slips out of the first round. That might be a guy you might want to go take a chance at. Johnny Newton, I think, is going to be maybe a first rounder no matter what. I don't imagine that he would be in the range where they could go get him as a player. T'Vondre Sweat, I mentioned, he's probably like the best combination of huge body that can move well, pure run stopping guy that you can play at nose and you know you're going to get positive value out of him. I would say Chris Jenkins is probably the third name that I would look at as a guy that's young, productive. And if you look at how he plays, I think he fits the way the Rams want to play in terms of being able to control blocks. He can play for penetration if you need him to. And he's a younger guy. And you look at his frame, knowing who his dad is, you could probably add a little bit of weight to him and let him play, similar to what you said with Kobe Turner. Those are two guys that you can probably mix and match with. matchup wise, right? If you need Kobe to go play more inside, Chris can go play the three technique. If you really like what Kobe looks like at the three technique, you can develop Chris into more of like your nose shade kind of two eye, and he can play that pretty well. So those would be like the top three names that I would look at in terms of like faves. And then the other guys, I think by role, you're probably looking at a little bit later. Mason Smith, I think, could play more on the interior over centers. He's probably going to be a later guy. That's probably a third, fourth round pick. I think there's another LSU guy who's escaping me. There's Mason Smith and Mekhi Wingo. That's another guy who's kind of like a 300 pounder that you can move around a little bit. He'll probably be a third, fourth round guy as well. So on the defensive interior, those would probably be the handful of names if I was a Rams fan, that if they go and select them, you'll know instantly what they're looking to do. And that's to put that guy at nose and allow Kobe Turner to be more of the guy who plays as a pass rusher, and their newly drafted defensive tackle to play more as a run stopper guy.
And then if you're looking at the edge players, fits and faves, again, I mean, and it's interesting to think about this because it really is. I mean, they're two, like I said, they needed an edge last year. They still need an edge. And so that hasn't changed. The Aaron Donald of it all has changed things. But in terms of like now you're looking at building out along the entire line. Who works best with Byron? Who works best with Kobe? And I love that you mentioned that position flex with Kobe and some of the other players that you mentioned, because it might be that Kobe is going to be the A plus at the nose and the other guy is going to be the A plus at the three or the two, you know, and like that, it might be that at the, by the time they get the draft is wild. Like you just don't know. And it might be that you're looking for two A pluses at their best to maximize their best traits in that moment. And I think with Kobe, one of the underrated qualities of his among like his entire rookie season, which was underrated and in its own way. But I think that like that position flex isn't talked about enough. I'm glad we're talking about it here because yes, he can, you know, they want to move him to that spot. And hopefully for him, that pass production continues to happen. But also, like, he can play the nose. I mean, the
He's
Rams
shown that
have
he
been
can
like a
do
top five run defense. And yes, they've had Aaron Donald, so like caveat on everything,
it.
guys. But but they've been a top five run defense for like the last what, 5 years? And so that's something. I mean, even last year I was like, oh, they're too small up front. And then like, look what happened.
No problem at all,
You know, so joke's on me, but like, so I think like that's something important. But then as you look at like building along the entire front and you're looking at edge players, who are your fits and faves and where might the Rams be able to get them?
This is where it gets fascinating to me, right? When you talk about Chris Shula, his tutelage coming up as a defensive coach, right? Again, bringing up John Pagano, who coached in San Diego, when the Chargers are still here. And when I think about that defense and what made that Chargers defense so special at its peak was that they had two pure pass rush threats in Sean Merriman and Sean Phillips, right? And those were two guys, one guy who really won with speed, one guy who can win a lot with power. Right. And if we're looking at Byron Young, obviously an amazing athlete, a guy who can tear off the edge, right? And I think that we saw a good amount of that from him in his rookie campaign. I think that you would want to complement that with the guy who's maybe more of a technician, right? Somebody who's going to have a consistent pressure rate week in and week out. Even if the sack production isn't there from a counting stats perspective, you know that he's affecting plays, and maybe Byron is more of the guy who goes for the big splashes. So to me, that's why I bring up Laiatu Latu, right? From UCLA. You watch his tape. Great, I think great hands, always has a pass rush plan, always working towards a quarterback. That's something that always makes an impression on me as a defensive guy, as somebody who's just effective at affecting the pocket, right? I want a guy who is always going, who's got to be in the back of a quarterback's mind, right? He can't play around in the pocket because there's no telling what angle that edge rusher is working. That's a guy who would be interesting to me on playing opposite of Byron if he continues to play at the level that he was at last year. There are certain guys I think that maybe come right off the board as maybe not the greatest fits. So I would say like a Chop Robinson, I think that's a little duplicative, right? When you think about speed rush, I would be surprised if that's the way they went. I think Jared Verse is a guy who probably fits for them. A guy who can play with power, who's going to be a pocket pusher type. that would be somebody I'd be interested to see. But the thing for me that becomes a little difficult is there's a clear cutoff, I think, for value at edge, at least in terms of immediate value at edge. Then the other guys, I think, would just be specialist role player types, right? So Braylon Trice from Washington, people got a lot of exposure to him on their national title appearance run. He is a power rusher, but I don't think that you're going to get enough, A to A plus production that you mentioned to identify that guy as a surefire top 100 pick, right? But maybe that's a later pick because they find a best player available situation that's too good to pass up on. But that's a guy you could maybe look at. Jonah Ellis is another like relentless pass rush type that you can maybe get later. So those are the guys outside of the first round that I will be looking at. Jared Verse and Laiatu would be the two that I would probably have an eye on if I'm a Rams fan early in the draft. And then if you don't get those guys, I would not be heartbroken if you don't see them make a swing at that position until the third or fourth round, when I think it's a little bit better to go get a Chris Braswell from Alabama, a Braylon Trice from Washington, like I mentioned, Adisa Isaac from Penn State, who played with Chop Robinson, and a Jonah Ellis from Utah. I think that would be like the handful of names outside of the first round that you can look at and say, by size, by play style, by athletic profile, all those things will probably fit what the Rams should be looking for in terms of edge rush.
Yeah, it's a great point too. If the ledge or the tiers or how things can kind of drop off between that first clear cut group of like first round, mid to late first round guys, and then into, probably later in that top 100, the third
Right.
round guys, day two guys. And how you can think about combinations, and you're probably going to put a skill player in there somewhere because
Right.
this is Sean McVay's team and he
Right.
will get very, very
Absolutely.
itchy up there in the draft room.
Absolutely.
So that's what I wanted to ask you next, because as we were talking about sort of all of this, it just, every year we're at the draft house, and it is funny because you can almost feel like the stress. Because so last year, and I reported this, so this is not like new news or anything like that. Last year they tried to trade up for a couple different skill guys, and that is very, I think, this is my opinion, Rams fans, that I think that is a lot of that is very like McVay driven, and he absolutely, should speak his mind. He has a vision for his offense, and obviously when that offense is clicking, it is very hard to stop. So like no shade, but like also it was interesting. Sometimes when things don't work out, it's okay because you still get the player that like the scouts were targeting the entire time, which was Steve Avila at pick 33 or 36. And so I think like and that really, really worked out, right? Now he's going to be their center, and maybe we'll, all things equal, and if he continues on this trajectory, could be their center for like the next decade. And so good for that, right? And so I think last year was so interesting because it was so many lessons for this team in discipline, in financial discipline, in really getting really back deep into process. I've written about this a lot with Sean, like deep back into coaching process, deep back into scouting and evaluation process, and all of those things that like kind of when you're sprinting for 7 years in a row and you're winning a lot of games, like some stuff either you're worn out and you don't realize it, or just some stuff's getting kind of lost along the
Yeah, I mean,
way.
that's natural attrition, right? That is natural attrition in the process. Things slip as you hyper focus on one or two particular things.
Yeah, exactly. And so my question for you is, Rams fans, do not kill me for this, please. If they go skill player in the first round, what would you do at that point with the rest of the top 100? And I don't remember how, I think they've got like four picks in the top 100, but what would you do with the next two picks at that point?
That's a good question. So they're at 19.
Because you're hoping that you don't have to, I might be texting you on draft day being like, oh my God,
It's happening.
Deontay.
Yes. That's a good question. So I want to take a second to kind of think about what would be at 19 that would really be a draw for McVay. So like I'm imagining Brian Thomas Jr., the wide receiver from LSU, is there. And maybe Sean's looking at it like, hey, I've got this kind of heir apparent already for Cooper Kupp with Puka Nacua, and that's a guy who can move around. I've got DeMarcus Robinson, who is like one of those. I think every offensive coach kind of has a wide receiver that's like their baby. because like they just know the offense and he fits the role so well. And I think that DeMarcus is a little bit of
Oh, for
that from
sure. Yeah,
McVay.
for sure. Yeah.
And I think, but I do think if he has an opportunity to get a Brian Thomas Jr., I think he looks at that like, wow, that's an opportunity to maybe go get an X receiver that can take the top off a defense, that can go win at the catch point, that has legit 4-3 speed, you know, and that's an element in this offense that when it's there and things are clicking, it opens up so much for Stafford. It opens up so much in the playbook for McVay. Obviously, you think about that Super Bowl run, and even with Odell not being the burner at that point in his career that he was in New York, just having that threat as an X opened up so much for Cooper, and it opened up so much for Stafford. And there was only so many things that you could do defensively, and that interplay with receivers is huge in Sean's offense, right? I think that he's a guy who is comfortable with playing matchup football, right? That's what that Super Bowl role run was when Cooper's got the obvious matchup problem. I'm gonna pepper at that until defenses have to bend towards that, and then I'll go to Odell. In the beginning of the Super Bowl, clearly there was a mismatch with Odell. He was attacking that until he got hurt, right? So I can see at 19 them maybe taking a swing at a guy like that. If that happens, my first question would be, is the thought that you take that offensive playmaker and then you're packaging up some of your other top 100 picks to go move up aggressively and take a swing at what you believe to be like a high profile player, right? So if a Jared Verse slips, you know, I think that New Orleans is about his range. That kind of early teams would be versus range, but not everybody's in love with him. So if he gets past that point and he starts slipping, and maybe you get an opportunity towards the end of the first round, you might be able to call like an Arizona and say, hey, we know you're trying to stockpile on draft capital. Are you willing to take some seconds, some thirds, some future thirds and fourths to allow us to get that 23rd pick or whatever the case may be? And maybe you can go get a guy like that. If they were to stand pat with their current draft capital, then I think the next 2 to 3 picks is going to be probably bringing in a couple of defensive tackles, and maybe I think the next best DB that you can go get, right? If you can go get a nickel corner type, right? So whoever slips between Kamari Lassiter from Georgia and Kool-Aid McKinstry, right? If they're available in the second round, those are guys that you can kind of move around with that can maybe be a number two corner type if you want to put Darius Williams back in the slot, right? If you still feel confident about him playing outside, then maybe you go take a swing at another safety type you can use as a utility guy, right? Something that they haven't had since John Johnson departed. Right. So I think that there's a little bit of optionality there, but I still think almost no matter what, at least two of their top 100 to 150 picks are going to be spent on the defensive interior. And if they can use a premium pick or trade up again to get a premium pick, then expect them to go get an edge rusher. So if I was building the board, that's the way that I would be looking at it, is those are our doing the Doctor Strange multiverse calculations. That's what I'm looking at, is we've got these three different pathways based on how the first round plays out.
Yeah, and people forget a lot too. Last year, what, 14 draft picks?
Right.
So it's like I think this year you could afford to, pile a couple together to move up and down, those types of things. Less trader less loves to, although
Yes.
you asked a very like logical and rational hypothetical question when you said, okay, my first question would be, are they standing pat? My first question, if they drafted a skill player in the first round, would be, okay, who fell or did Les just walk off the roof? Like,
Right.
that would be my
That's funny.
first question.
Yeah.
Deontay, I have one more question for you, big picture.
Yes.
The Rams are obviously looking at how to build this line back out without Aaron Donald. And they were one of the rare and I think lucky few that were able to invest in an absolute math-changing interior defensive player and
Right.
in more math-changing ways than even some of the other defensive interior players that are of a similar, tier, because Aaron could also rush from the edge. And
Right.
so I'm kind of wondering, like, when you look at the DT market right now, when you look at like where teams are not just electing to draft them, but when they are electing to pay them,
Yeah.
would D-line be something that you still would take maybe in the first, understanding the market's inflating, if that guy is there with the fifth year option potentially available? Or do you still think that the trends kind of show, okay, get the guy where you can. If it's in the
Yeah.
second round, you and he's, worthy of being paid, or like in Kobe's case, we don't know yet what he
Right.
will develop into,
Right.
third rounder. But like in Kobe's case, at some point, the contract comes up. And so what are your thoughts on how teams are being built in that regard? And then where would you potentially take, if you could pick and you were building this, where would you take the D linemen, understanding, where the market is kind of going years from now?
So I think this is interesting to me because I think that as we get smart, as the NFL gets better and better at understanding the modern context of playing defense, right, and trying to take away explosive offense, I think that it's going to be less and less likely that you can go get a star defensive tackle outside of the first round. So it's almost hard to say. You can't really borrow from past reference points and say that that will work now, right? Chris Jones was not a first round pick. You will never see a Chris Jones type not be a first rounder, right? Assuming that there's no injury issues, no off the field issues, a guy with that athletic and size profile probably never falls out of the first round. A Justin Madubuike is an outlier, right? Like that's more of the rarity. You're going to have more of your, Quinnen Williams guys being first rounders where it's like immediately identifiable. This is a Pro Bowl to all pro level player. And I think because of that, if that level of player is available and you have a first round pick to spend, you have to go get that guy because it does make a huge difference to me. It's not like linebacker, maybe, where you can look at the linebacker position similar to the running back position, which is like if there is a transformative guy, people will debate you, but you'll never be wrong from a team building perspective by going to go get a transformative guy at that position. It just so happens that the way that positional value is laid out, the chances of you landing that guy is probably a little bit lesser than others. You can go find a true math changing defensive tackle in the draft these days. So I think that if that's the goal, then yeah, you take a first round swing if you think that guy is that guy. Outside of that, everything to me then is about what role are you looking to fill? And that comes back to what we've been talking about today, right? Like the Mekhi Wingos and Mason Smiths, Chris Jenkins, these defensive tackles, I think all of these guys can be great players. Those are players that like fans of a team are going to love, right? You're always going to want those guys paid and on your roster because they are positive contributors to winning and they make a difference in building your defense. I don't know if you're going to find a transformative, hey, this guy is going to be a first team all pro. This is going to be a consistent Pro Bowl level talent. I don't know how often you're going to find those guys late in the draft. To the effect that you do, it is almost always going to be in spite of everything that tells you that you're not going to find that guy, right? There is no way to predict that Kobe Turner was going to be as good as he was for where he
Right.
was drafted, right? And if anybody could have predicted that that was going to be a guy who could produce a 12, 13% pressure rate, right? If not better, and go get you a handful of sacks, almost 10 sacks on a year, that's not a guy you go get, day two, day three of the draft. Same with Byron Young. So I just think that teams, I think maybe you're looking at defensive line more holistically, right? Because pass rushing with four and not having the blitz is going to be at the utmost premium now. Getting guys who just produce that 13 plus percent pressure rate that can finish with sacks and get a bunch of quarterback hits, those are guys you got to draft in the first round, almost irrespective of what position they play. So I think that we'll see a little bit more of that. I think it just so happens that this is a draft that doesn't have that guy. Right. It's not like last year where Jalen Carter was in the draft, and it's like very, and you see how teams treated that pick. You see how Philadelphia looked at him in spite of what he was going through. And had that car crash not happened and the arrest subpoena had not been issued at the combine, that guy probably does go second or third overall in the draft, right? Somebody would have traded up, if not one of the top three teams, taking him outright. He probably doesn't fall to nine. And that speaks to the way that teams see that position. So if a guy is available, there's really no cap on where he can be drafted, right? But if he's not available, then I think you want to look more third round, get guys who can plug and play at different roles, bring in veteran guys, treat it like a rotation, have your three to four guys you trust to play, and maybe one of them pop. And if they do, great for you. If not, you're just going to be playing more for role players up the middle of your defense, in my opinion.
This has been Fantastic. Every time we talk, I feel like I learn something, and we sort of pass back and forth the existential crises a little bit,
Of
which is also
course.
very nice. We love to bond.
Yes.
And so, I Deontay, I appreciate you so much for coming on, sharing your insight
Thank you.
with Rams fans and also fans of this podcast beyond the Rams group. And as always, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Of
Would
course.
love for people to know where they can find you. Deontay is going to be doing a ton of draft coverage as usual, but also is available to pick up freelance work, anything that you guys might want to have his insight. As you can see, fantastic insight in this space and many, many more. So,
Thank
Deontay, tell
you.
everyone where they can find you.
So I am on Twitter at Deontay Lee FB. No underscore spaces or anything like that. You can email me if you are interested in working with me at deontaylee@gmail.com. That's all one word. And like you said, I'm open to freelance. It's not just draft. I'll cover football. This is my life. So any opportunity I get to speak about the game, I'm always eager to do it. And we're sorting out exactly what the future is going to look like for me. I talked to you, pre-show about, looking at what potential pivots might be available. And, there might be something out there for me. But as far as the sports media, multimedia space goes, if anybody needs anybody to talk ball, I'm the guy. So you can reach me on Twitter, reach me by email, and I'm open to hearing whatever anybody has to offer at this stage.
And any place you go, and any people that get your insight, automatically are made better for that, are made smarter for that. So could not more enthusiastically support you as you continue through your career. So excited to see what's coming next. I know it's going to be rad, whatever it is.
Thank you.
11 Personnel listeners, we are kind of chugging along here. So stay tuned for more updates about the show. And I hope you guys are staying caffeinated. I hope you guys are staying hydrated. I hope you guys are taking care of yourselves
You
and
gotta
each
pay low
other.
price.
And we'll see you next time.
You want it bad enough, you gotta do a little extra things to get it.